Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. A very, very close family member recently had a successful life-saving surgery. The last couple of days have been very intense, and I have been blown away by the nurses. I just spoke with this family member. Luckily, he's getting so much better, and he says his nurses have been amazing. And it just made me realize that if you don't have experience directly with a hospital, you don't really know what nurses do. And talking to them multiple times a day over the last couple days have just made me realize that this experience just shows how hard they work and how dedicated they are. So on today's Your Call, we're celebrating nurses and discussing their struggles as they deal with another COVID surge, a worsening staffing shortage, and an overworked environment. Nurses across the country are leaving the profession due to stress, burnout, and the trauma involved in caring for so many dying COVID patients. Nurses say morale continues to plummet as hospital administration and management prioritize the bottom line over proper nurse staffing and safe patient care. So what will it take to create a sustainable and supportive work environment where nurses can provide the best possible care for their patients? Zeni Triunfo-Cortez is a nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco Medical Center, where she's worked since 1980, and she's the president of the California Nurses Association. Hi, Zeni. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Zeni, as I mentioned, a family member just had a successful life-saving surgery. Luckily, he is okay and he's recovering. But like I said, I don't think you realize how hard nurses work until you're in a situation like this. I mean, I've been calling the hospital every few hours and the nurses have been so, so helpful. So this is a very general question, but obviously nursing is such a difficult profession, but all of the nurses I've spoken to have said it's the most amazing job and I wouldn't do anything else.
Yes, that's true. Nursing is a calling, and I think it takes a special person to be a nurse. I have been a nurse since 1980, so that's over 40 plus years of nursing. And I think it's the passion, it's the caring that it's inherent in all of the nurses that make us do what we do. And you know, for me, I treat my patients like they're my family. So I really love nursing.
How do you do it? I mean, when I talked to my family member this morning, he said, you know, I'm overheating. So they brought in a fan. They put a towel on my head. Whenever I need a piece of ice, I just hit this button. And he's only been in there for a few days. And they go into, well, in this case, emergency mode so fast. And I just wonder, how do you do it going from patient to patient? I mean, literally saving lives. In the case of my family member, his life was saved.
Yes, it's a little difficult, a little challenging, but we hold up to our pledge that we will treat each patient the way they need to be treated. And we will help them with whatever way we could in order for them to get better and to get well. And so we continue to do that day after day. And our reward and our good feeling is that we were able to help someone get better. So that's what makes us go through each day, you know, helping the vulnerable and those who could not speak for themselves, like the babies and the elderly. So it's a rewarding experience.
I mean, you're juggling so much, dealing with so many patients, talking with other staff members, and then letting family members know what's happening with their loved one.
Yes, that's true. And I think it comes with experience, you know, over a period of time where you learn to prioritize and deal with the family, you know, all together so that they are up to date with what's going on with their loved ones. And especially now it's challenging where patients' families cannot come in to see their loved ones or even be at the bedside with their loved ones. So we have to make sure that the family is updated with what's going on. And then at the same token, we need to let the patient know that their families are calling to find out how they're doing and extending their concern, their love, and, you know, that their thoughts are with the patient.
Right. And Zenny, since you have been a nurse since 1980, you've seen so much. And I mentioned just a few of the struggles, the surge, the worsening staffing shortage, and overworked environment. When you look back at your nursing career, what really stands out for you when you think about the changes that you've seen and experienced?
When I graduated nursing, it was an ideal situation because we spent a lot of time with the patient, because back in the days, I would say healthcare was not seen as big business. It was seen as care of health of the public. And so I remember, you know, sitting at the bedside with the patient, talking to them and explaining what will happen once they go home, doing all the teaching, answering their questions, and then involving the family and all that. So I was there at the bedside much longer than what is happening now. So I find that scenario so fulfilling that, you know, it embodies the essence of what we have learned in nursing school. Then fast forward to today, it's really mind-boggling, and it bothers me a lot that we cannot spend that much time with the patient, let alone with the family, because our staffing has been cut to the bare minimum, and patients are sicker when they're in the hospital.
Right. So tell us more about this. When, as you said, healthcare was not seen as big business when you started back in 1980. What changed?
I think it's all this major mergers and acquisitions of smaller hospitals being swallowed by the bigger hospital chains. And then at one point, all of the hospital administrators would have background in healthcare. It would be a nurse or a doctor, but now we have business leaders who are running the hospitals. And they do not have, I think, even though they do have the idea of what it takes to run the hospital, they are not there at the patient care level to know what's really happening. So a lot of the business decisions are made in the boardrooms and not really at the level where the action is happening. So I think that's the big change. And then also what the hospital industry is looking at is where can they cut to make money? And they know that nursing care is the biggest budget of anywhere. And so they cut there, and it's the patients who suffer, and also the nurses, because we need to portion our time. We need to, budget our time so that the sickest of our patients get more of the time. And then the ones who are a little better or not that sick just get the minimum time from us. So it's unconscionable, and I myself I'm really bothered. I'm morally distressed because of that.
Who makes these decisions, Zenny? So when you have a patient come in, how do you determine how much time you can spend with each patient?
Well, we look at the acuity of the patient. And of course, if the patient needs a lot of care, then we spend a lot of time with the patient. And like with what happened to your family member, there was an emergency and the family member needed a lot of attention and needed acute care. So for me as a nurse, that would mean I would be there at the bedside, at the side of that patient, because the patient needed that immediate attention. And so with the rest of the patients under my assignment, that would mean they either have to wait or whatever time I have left, then that's what they get. And again, it's not something that nurses like to do, but we are put in that situation where we have to make that decision.
How many patients do you take care of on any given day? And can you just talk about your hours and just what an overall day is like?
So if the daily routine of a nurse depends on where you work. Here in California, we are a lot luckier because we have the nurse to patient ratios, which means in a medical surgical unit, the most number of patients you will have is 5 in any given time. But what's happening is that the administration should not really be looking at the numbers, but should be looking at the acuity of the patient. Because I might have only 5, that's good, which is within the law, the safe staffing ratio law, but what's the acuity of those 5 patients? Maybe it's a high acuity patient, so which means I should have less than 5. But that's not what's happening, and that's where the problem is. The hospital industry just looks at the numbers and not really look at the patients, which is not really correct. And so again, as a nurse, that's morally distressing because the most sickest, I would say, double adjective, the sickest patient gets the most time from me, and the ones who are not that sick gets the least, which is not right.
Today, we are celebrating nurses and talking about the struggles that they deal with. We're joined by Zeni Triunfo-Cortez, a nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco Medical Center, where she has worked since 1980. Zeni is also president of the California Nurses Association. And if you have any questions or comments for Zeni, if you're a nurse and you have a story to share, you can be anonymous, or if you're a patient who's been in a hospital or you've had a loved one in a hospital and you have a story to share, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Zeni, the California Nurses Association has done so many actions. I mean, I'm just looking right now at your list of actions. More than 14,000 nurses ratify agreement with Dignity Health on a 4-year contract. UC Davis Medical Center nurses are going to hold a virtual press conference to demand UC provide safe staffing and stronger workplace protections tomorrow. Nurses, caregivers held a virtual press conference to demand Palomar Health put patients first. Can you just talk to us about, you know, the differences between these hospitals and what happens when you demand, for example, you talk about having 5 patients a day, but those 5 patients might need most of your time. And so how do you make those decisions? How does management respond when you bring up these concerns?
Well, you know, we've been raising the issue about patient safety and safe quality patient care to management for the longest time. And then now we are hit with COVID, which means patients come in who are a lot sicker and requires more attention. The difference between, well, overall, all of the hospital industry continue to look at the bottom line, which means they give us the bare minimum for staffing. And so what we do is we try to hold informational pickets. We do marches to the boss to let them know that what's happening and what they're doing, the decisions that they are making, is not right. And if we do public informational picket, we are showing the public that we are fighting for them. This is what's going on inside the hospital. Come support us. Let the hospital management know that you are supporting the nurses, which means that when you come into the hospital, you need the care that you deserve. And so those are the kind of overall theme of what we are doing. We are making sure that we have the staffing, we have the nurses, we have the support staff to safely take care of our patients, because our patients are in a very vulnerable situation, and they cannot just get up and go and leave and go to another hospital. No, what they need is for the nurses to be their advocates for the care that they need. And so when we do this public informational pickets, then we let them know that they need to call in. They need to let their elected officials know also that what the hospital administration is doing is not correct. Then on the 14,000 nurses of Dignity Health that just ratified their contract, they provided, Dignity Health provided stronger language on safe patient care, and that they have admitted that healthcare is a human right, which has been there and should have been followed, you know, for the longest time. But again, the hospitals look to see where they could cut. And of course, they cut the patient care in that budget, because they know that that's the most expensive budget. And if they can cut nurses and support staff, they will do that. But again, we continue to fight for our patients, for the public, for us as well, because if our work conditions are not good, then there's no way we could sustain this for a long time.
You said that your morale has been affected by all of this. Can you talk more about that and what you're hearing from your colleagues?
Well, you know, what we've learned in nursing school, let's take one example, is that if there is a communicable disease, or if there's an infection, if there's an infected patient, we are provided with the gowns, the gloves, the masks, head cover, shoe cover. And then when we come out of that patient's room, all of that needs to be discarded. But what they were telling us to do is that we could use it to the next, for the next patient, which is wrong. And so, but we are put in that situation where we have to practice something that is morally wrong, and health-wise, it's wrong. And so that puts us into a lot of, you know, mixed feelings that this should not be right, but what choices do we have? Our next patient needs us. And so, you know, it's very difficult. And because of that, our patients, our nurses now are morally distressed. Like I said, their morale is way down, because they cannot practice what they know and have learned and have been educated and have been trained. Our patients are dying, our nurses are dying, and yet we do not get the support from our hospital management. And yet we are being told to do more with less.
What has it been like to work under COVID? I mean, right now, when you think about what nurses are dealing with in states where the numbers are just so high and having to experience so much suffering and death, and then the nurses are exposed to COVID and they just hope that they don't bring it home to their families. What has that been like for you and your colleagues, Annie?
Well, it was really very challenging because, especially when COVID first hit, we did not have enough personal protective equipment. The hospital did not have any protocols or any policy in place so that people were making do with what was there. We had nurses using garbage bags as gowns. We were told by the World Health Organization and the Department of Public Health that bandanas are good enough to cover our nose and our mouths. When we use gloves, we were told that we were scaring our patients and that we did not have to use that. We were reprimanded when we were wearing masks to protect ourselves. And so all that came into play at the beginning of the pandemic. And that was not a good way to combat the virus. And then we had nurses dying. And so if the hospital industry and the agencies that are in place should have stepped up and did their jobs, this would have been, we would be in a much better situation. But that's done. We move forward. And yet some of our hospital facilities still do not provide adequate personal protective equipment for our patients. We are still being told that in your patient assignment, you can take care of a COVID positive patient and a non-COVID patient, which is wrong once again because of infection control. But those are the kinds of things that we continue to fight for every day. And when, again, decisions are made by the hospital management, it's not in line with what's going on at the bedside, at the patient care level. And so, again, it's part of what we fight for every day, every day. And then for the fact that we might be bringing home something to our loved ones, and especially if our household has our extended families, our parents, grandparents, and we have young kids who have not been vaccinated. Those, all of those come into play. And as a nurse, you need to keep all of that in mind. But once we are at work, we do our best to be safe, to take care of our patients, and at the same token, continue to advocate, continue to fight for the PPE and safety measures and more staffing. And so all of that come into play on an everyday basis. And it's really difficult. It's challenging, but it's something that we signed up for and we will continue to do that.
Zenny, can you also talk about nurses who speak out and what happens? I mean, the only way for the public to know about this is if we hear directly from nurses. And we booked another nurse to share their experience, but they canceled and said, I'm getting pressure not to talk with you. I know that anonymity is possible, but this organization I work with doesn't really value nurses speaking about their experience. This nurse said that they wanted me to read a statement from them, and they had a lot of things to say, but I'll just read one. They said that nurses are physically, emotionally, and mentally tired. Besides the vigilance to keep our families and patients safe, there is the added burden of being knowingly exposed to the virus every single day we show up at the hospital. In some ways, we're fortunate. Unlike people who work at the grocery store, teachers, or bus drivers, we know to expect exposure and prepare for it. However, seeing the illness day in and day out is so hard on the soul, totally exhausting. That coupled with the struggle to be protected, that has taken a toll on nurses and doctors alike. I've been in touch with this nurse over throughout COVID, and so I invited this nurse to join us. They said they could, but then this morning they said, I'm sorry, I'm getting pressure not to talk with you. Is this common?
Well, I would say the good thing about joining or belonging to a union is that you can speak out and speak up and be a real patient advocate, because you are protected by a union that whose main mission is safe patient care and safe environment, work environment for the nurse. And so with me speaking out, I am not afraid of retaliation because I'm speaking the truth. And I have the California Nurses Association, my union, behind me, you know, and perhaps the other nurse who wanted to speak but backed out, I do not know where she works, but perhaps she is afraid of retaliation. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing that a lot of our nurses were afraid to do at the beginning of COVID. But as we continue to speak out and speak up, then a lot more nurses became assertive and are now doing what they needed to do, which is advocating for their patients and for themselves, because if they do not do that, nobody else will.
Right. Well, we have one email before we let you go I wanted to read to you. Ted writes, hospital admin are awarding themselves huge salaries, jaw-dropping numbers similar to university administrators, north of $500,000 a year. And of course, shareholders and investors are reaping windfalls too. This is falling on the backs of the nurses and other hospital workers. What's your comment to that, Zenny?
Well, that's probably true, because when at the height of the COVID surge, patients were not coming to the clinics for, you know, doctor's visits, doctor's appointments, because everything was done online. And the hospital saved a lot of money on supplies, on everything else. And so, but in the meantime, a lot of our patients and, you know, you continue to pay your monthly premiums, your, you know, your whatever copays you needed to do. But at the same token, the other side, the hospital industry saved a lot of money. And so with that, they earned a lot of money. They have a lot of profit. Even though they don't call it profits, it's called excess revenue, because they saved a lot of money. And so with that money saved, then it would go to the pockets of administrators, shareholders, or board of directors, whatever. But yes, that's true. And it's unconscionable. They should funnel that money saved back into patient care. Mm-hmm. Better staffing, more personal protective equipment, and anything that has to do with patient care. They should funnel that money back to patient care.
Well, Zenny, the fact of the matter is all of us are either going to spend some time in a hospital or have a loved one in a hospital. And we obviously want the best care possible. And we also want to support nurses and staff. What is the best way for people to support nurses and to make to ensure that these changes are made?
Well, for now, with COVID still present and all around us, if you have the ability to get vaccinated, please do so, because even with the breakthrough infections, when you are infected with the COVID virus, it's not as hard as it would if you were not vaccinated. So please, if you are able to get vaccinated, please do that. Continue to wear your masks, because it really helps with the spread, and then avoid crowds. I know there are a lot of events happening, concerts, flea markets, county fairs. Those are super spreaders. If you can avoid going there, please avoid it, because COVID is still here. Wash your hands frequently. And if you're not feeling well, please stay home, because we do not know whether you have the early symptoms of the infection. And you will be able to help the nurses if you follow all that. Because right now we want the COVID pandemic to ease up, because the sooner we do it, the better off we all are.
Well, Zenny, huge thanks to you and all of your colleagues for the amazing work that you all do in caring for human beings. Really, it's truly, truly amazing. We're just so grateful. And thank you for the work that you do with the California Nurses Association.
Well, thank you for having me.
Zenny Triunfo-Cortez is a nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco Medical Center, where she has worked since 1980. She is president of the California Nurses Association. They have attracted national praise as a leading advocate of guaranteed health care by expanding and updating Medicare to cover everyone in the United States. Coming up after a break, we'll speak with Lisa Hartmeyer, a nurse practitioner at UCSF. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are celebrating nurses and talking about their struggles as they deal with another COVID surge, a worsening staffing shortage, and an overworked environment. Now we would like to welcome Lisa Hartmeyer to the show. Lisa is a nurse practitioner with 19 years of nursing experience. Lisa is at UCSF. She cares for patients while they're in the hospital to have kidney or pancreas transplant surgery. Lisa is co-chair of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy and Environments Practice Work Group. This is a nonprofit whose mission is to promote healthy people and healthy environments by educating and leading the nursing profession, advancing research, incorporating evidence-based practice, and influencing policy. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, before we talk about the struggles, again, just to talk about how amazing you all are, I shared a little bit of the story about my loved one who just had a successful life-saving surgery, and I've just been blown away by the nurses. You've got 19 years of nursing experience, Lisa. Why did you decide to become a nurse?
Like your former speaker said, Zenny, it's a calling. It's something that you're really called to do, and I can't imagine a better profession and better career. It is, when I care for patients, the energy that they give me back is rewarding. It makes me feel like I'm in the right place doing the right thing when I'm able to care for my patients and give them what they need. I am so overjoyed that I have been able to become a nurse and then a nurse practitioner and been able to continue my education and path with that support through my institution.
So I'm sure you have also seen so much change over the last 19 years. What really stands out for you about, you know, how the system has really changed?
It's a great question. There's been a lot of good change as well as a lot of bad change. I think the bad changes have really come because of the pressures of the pandemic. Again, your speaker previously mentioned the challenge of not having patients' families around, and that is something that we see on a day-to-day basis. There's restrictions about family members being in the hospital right now to prevent the spread of COVID. And so much of patient care is dependent on family members and educating them about how to take care of their loved one once they get home, teaching about medications, answering questions. And then, you know, if they can't be there in the hospital with patients, it's really hard for both the patients and the nurses to do what they need to do. So that's been frustrating. One of the good changes that's come out recently is I do think that there's been more of an understanding of the impacts of climate change on health for patients and families. However, there still is an increased burden on the healthcare system with climate change, because we know these health impacts from heat waves and storms, floods, droughts, fires can alter infectious disease patterns, cause more air pollution and food shortages. And that's also then going to cause an increased demand for healthcare services and need for healthcare workers. And right now, we really have a shortage of healthcare workers and nurses.
Right. I mean, we've done so many shows about how smoke affects our health. We talked about a study that came out about how it's making COVID even worse because it affects the respiratory system. So how are hospitals preparing for all of, I mean, it's happening now, but unless we really make massive changes, it's just going to get worse. How are hospitals preparing for this?
Yeah, different hospitals are doing different things. We do know that the healthcare sector in the United States is responsible for almost 10% of greenhouse gas emissions. Unfortunately, the United States healthcare sector is the number one emitter of both absolute and per capita terms, 57 times more emissions per person than somewhere like India. So we really have to make a change about this. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see the health effects on patients and have less of a workforce. Many hospitals are instituting sustainability teams and having sustainability leaders that are going to implement different actions from changes in their purchasing powers to recycling and different things like that. I can't stress that it has to be done faster and more has to be done across the board. And right now we have a major distraction with COVID, which also it really increases waste and purchasing and supply chain issues. So it's a really big challenge right now for everyone.
So talk about how you all have been affected by COVID as nurses at UCSF. I understand that you had a COVID exposure for a week and had to get tested, and there was just no one to cover you. And I'm assuming that this happens on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, so we have to take precaution. If we have a COVID exposure, we get tested and we are, you know, isolating at home. And it is a concern that no one's going to be able to cover us, because if more than one person in the department gets exposed, then that will affect the workforce there. I fortunately had a moonlighting doctor, as they call it, able to cover my shift that day, and then everyone stepped up. But it is a very fragile system in that if the office itself gets exposed, it could be a real challenge to find coverage for the workforce during that time. We take such extreme caution because we can expose our patients. And I work with immunocompromised patients, and they unfortunately can get sicker with COVID, even if they have been vaccinated. I know we had a patient who had a previous kidney transplant on immunosuppression with a COVID vaccine and had respiratory failure and was in the ICU recently. So I can't stress enough that if you can get vaccinated, please do. That is an amazing way to support nursing, as Zenny said.
Well, and to that point, after my loved one called 911, he was sent to a hospital that didn't have the doctor he needed, and it took 4 hours for them to find an ICU bed. And this is in Sonoma County. And I thought 4 hours was long, but you know, the more I learn, some patients are sent from Sonoma County all the way to UC Davis. In his case, he didn't have time to spare. So this is all new to me. I just didn't realize that you had to be transferred and you have to wait to see if an ICU bed is open. I mean, I have heard about those horrendous stories of people waiting and unfortunately passing because there are no ICU beds available. So we're still in this crisis. In the case of what we dealt with, we're not sure that they were all COVID patients in these beds, but it's definitely a factor.
Yeah, that's right. If patients are at different hospitals or smaller hospitals and need to get a higher level of care, they will get transferred to another hospital. And those wait times can be very long. And those patients get triaged, meaning, you know, who needs to go to those hospitals first based on how sick they are. And that process can take a very long time depending on the transfer process and bed availability in the accepting hospital. And so it can be really scary. And yes, I did hear about that patient. I think it was in a different state that wasn't able to get an ICU bed and unfortunately passed away because they couldn't get the care that they needed. this is a big problem. And that's why it's really important for people to understand that if they show up to the ER, it may be a long stay. And that breaks my heart as a nurse, that we have our patients spending the night overnight in the emergency room. They're still getting good care, but it's not a very comfortable place to be in the emergency room on a stretcher waiting for a hospital bed to open up. It's not ideal at all. And I think that that's a problem that we're going to have in terms of when you think about bed shortages, it's also important to understand that it's not just a bed shortage. It could be that there's no nurse to staff that bed on that care floor. And that's a problem.
That is such a good point. I mean, I think this headline from NPR just says it all. This was September 14th, so last week, a man died after being turned away from 43 ICUs at capacity due to COVID, according to his family. His name was Ray DeMagna. He was 73, born in Coleman, Alabama. He died on September 1st, 200 miles away in an intensive care unit in Meridian, Mississippi. I mean, this is devastating, Lisa. I was just thinking, I'm just so grateful that we don't live in a place where all of these beds are taken by COVID. I mean, my loved one did not have time to be flown to another state. And I just can't imagine families that are in this situation where they cannot find a bed in their own area.
It's truly frightening. And unfortunately, I think it's going to continue this way for a while if we don't continue to advocate for getting people vaccinated. We do know, again, like Zenny said before, we do know that if you're vaccinated, you still have a chance of getting COVID, but it's going to be less severe and likely that you will not be admitted to the hospital. So get vaccinated. You know, the other thing, too, is I think that some patients are deferring their routine care and not following through on routine screenings, and then they get sicker. And then what could be something that could be handled more easily is then an emergency. And so we don't want to see that happen to patients either. So I really encourage everybody out there to make sure that they follow up on routine care and screenings and, you know, schedule your appointments with your primary provider to address any issues you have instead of showing up at the emergency room if at all possible.
We're speaking with Lisa Hartmeyer, a nurse practitioner at UCSF with 19 years of nursing experience. Lisa is also co-chair of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. It's a nonprofit whose mission is to promote healthy people and healthy environments by educating and leading the nursing profession. We have a couple of comments from listeners. Holly says, nursing shortages are due to just-in-time staffing models. These corporations only allow for the staffing minimum. We never have extra staff. On tough days, an overworked nurse may have a few pizza slices offered, but never an extra nurse. When I hear that there aren't enough ICU beds, I know that means that there aren't enough nurses. Or a three-year resident is trying to find the least sick patient in the ICU to transfer to the step down or medical surgical floor. We also have a comment from Kristen. My last day at the hospital was the second of this month. I hated abandoning my coworkers, but I made self-preservation a priority. The toll this pandemic has taken on healthcare workers is yet to be known. I have been damaged emotionally from the things I have witnessed and the behavior of some patients. All I can say is God bless all healthcare workers. Be prepared when they all walk out from duress. Then what will we do? What are your thoughts on this, Lisa? There have been so many stories and surveys about people who are just leaving because they cannot take it anymore.
Yeah, it's really scary and it's really sad. And unfortunately, I think it's very true. We have to support the nurses because burnout is very real. And, you know, what nurses want most is safe staffing. And that means that they're caring for an appropriate amount of patients with an appropriate acuity level. There's nothing worse than not being able to give your patients what they need. And that's a horrible feeling. So I think we have to continue to, and we lost a lot of nurses during this pandemic because people didn't feel like it was safe to work at the beginning of the pandemic. I know for one, a family member of mine left her position because she was close to retirement and she felt that the risk of getting COVID was too severe for her to work. And so we're losing senior nurses, which is also a challenge because they have very valuable experience that just can't be replaced with a new nurse. We need to continue to support new nurses. It's really important for nurses to be able to continue their education and advance their careers so that if they don't get burned out in one area, they can work in a different area. So supporting students is really important as well. I don't have an easy answer, but we also need to pay attention that, you know, the climate change is going to cause this increased burden on healthcare systems and healthcare workers. And we need to figure out a way to make sure that there's adequate and even better than adequate staffing for the future.
How do you deal with burnout?
That's a great question. And I usually find that going into nature is the most helpful thing at this time to make me feel relaxed. Going to look at the ocean and just realizing that there's a really big world out there pausing, you know, to really be thankful for all that I have and to think about certain patients that have touched my life. And I'm grateful for what I've been able to do for them helps me continue and not burn out.
When you look back over your career of 19 years, what else stands out for you in terms of the patient load, chronic disease? I mean, this is a whole other hour because I've been looking at some of the statistics on, you know, cancer rates, chronic disease, just what people are dealing with and how the numbers are just skyrocketing. And I just wonder, how is this health system going to deal with this as the population ages and as these numbers continue to increase?
You're right. That could take like a whole other hour long show.
Right.
From my personal experience, when I first became a nurse, my very first job, I was working in a different state and I had 8 patients to care for. And I thought that I didn't like, the profession of nursing. I said, well, this is, you know, unsafe. We had so many patient falls and so many ulcers from patients not being able to get out of bed or not being turned properly. And I left that position. There was no nurse to patient ratios in that state. And I took a couple travel nurse jobs and I came out to California and I realized that it wasn't nursing that I didn't love. It's that I didn't love that I couldn't do my job safely or appropriately. And so I'm so grateful for nurse to patient ratios in staffing so that you can provide the best care that you are able to. You know, right now we are seeing sicker patients because of these chronic diseases. It's something that's not going to get better unless we address it. We have to address it both systematically, and we also have to address it on the individual level and, make sure it's not ignored.
Right.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely do another show about that, about prevention, about what healthcare, you know, really means and what needs to change. I also understand we only have a couple minutes left, but you're dealing with a shortage of some medical supplies. There's a shortage of tubes you collect blood in. That's the blue top tube. And then also after the hurricane in Puerto Rico, you couldn't get sodium bicarbonate because it's produced in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, this is really interesting, and I don't think the public is really aware of sometimes that there's a shortage of medical supplies that are limited, and I think this is something that really became more evident with masks and the supply chain when COVID first hit. And I don't know all the specific details of why some of these medical supplies are difficult to find, but for example, there were a lot of supplies that were made in Puerto Rico, and after the hurricane there a few years ago, we weren't able to get those supplies, like sodium bicarbonate and bags that are used to hang antibiotics. And it really makes you understand that the supply chain is very fragile when we get supplies from different countries. And if they're impacted by climate-related events, then people here are also going to be related by those climate-related events. And so we're one globe and one people, and so people have to understand that that climate change can hit home in many different ways.
It's such an important point. In our final minutes, Lisa, we have about 2 minutes left. What can people do to support nurses and some of the changes that you're all calling for?
Get vaccinated, for starters. Don't defer your routine care. Make sure that you're following up with your primary care provider. And if you can avoid going to the emergency room for routine things, that's really important because the emergency rooms are really impacted. Stay home if you feel ill. And it may seem, just not that important, but it really is. That's really important ways to support nurses. If you're a family member of a patient that's in the hospital, understand that sometimes we are busy, but we're giving your loved one the best possible care. And if we don't call you back right away, it's not because we don't want to.
No, you just made me real. Yesterday, I spoke with my loved one's nurse, and she said, call as much as you want. If we're busy, we will call you back. And they have just been so amazing. I'm just completely blown away by the nurses taking care of him. And you, all of you, Lisa, I just think it's so important to hear from nurses to find out just what you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. So huge thanks to you and all of your colleagues for taking care of your patients with so much compassion and really saving lives. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Lisa Hartmeyer is a nurse practitioner at UCSF with 19 years of nursing experience and co-chair of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. And I hope you can join us tomorrow. We are going to open the lines to find out what you want from your call. We do this maybe once or twice a year. And so we're going to open the lines to find out what you would like us to cover with so much going on. You can also email now yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering the show. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.